They were, so in other words, the hard assets of the world have been bought by these people for a long time. So they're not really worried about a financial crash if they own all the titles to things.
Indeed, and they've put those titles in trusts, a very important thing which you raised a few minutes ago, Darrell. The Bank of America's loss this week have announced a loss of $28 billion in its single biggest trust. It had a trust under management worth $40 billion. It's now worth only 12. That money was lost through mismanagement on their part, and the trust itself has now been frozen. If that had been a trust made up of hard assets and not derivative products, speculative derivative products, then there can be no doubt that it would still be worth the same. The other people that you mentioned are holding a big hard asset at the moment are the Chinese. They do have $1.2 trillion in cash. Cash can't go belly up, Darrell. It can be.
Yes, but cash can get devalued, and that might be why the quarter point is my point. They may be holding more cards because of their cash position than we know. And they can say, hey, look, we'll just dump. Dump our $1.4 trillion if you put 50.
That's exactly what they did threaten to do on a previous occasion. But the Chinese traditionally do things openly, and I didn't see such an announcement. But it is possible that it was done behind closed doors. But they have threatened to dump $200 or $300 billion in cash just, you know, because we're not happy with a particular policy decision. And they've realized that the Federal Reserve Bank, on hearing such news, because the Federal Reserve doesn't have that much cash itself to intervene in the markets, this is why the Chinese now decide the value of the dollar.
Well, you know, they're running three shifts a day at the Fed. They just put a fourth shift on now. So we've got 32 hours worth of work going on in a 24-hour day at the Treasury, printing dollars. I'm kidding, of course, ladies and gentlemen. But that's the kind of printing going on, because we're seeing 12 and 15% rises in the amount of M3 is being estimated, because we don't know for sure, because M3, as you all know, was eliminated from our analysis. They took it off of our ability to see what they were doing. They knew this was coming, Mohammed. That's why they got rid of M3.
Well, of course, people in the know, as you're aware, I've got contacts in the bond industry, and the people that are very big contacts at that. People were telling me 14, 16 months ago that they'd been offloading, as an investment bank, offloading all the subprime stuff. The idea, what they do, Darrell, is, just so everybody understands, they keep it out of the news so that the people who actually understand what's going on, they make sure it doesn't reach the press. That gives them sufficient time to leave trusts holding the baby. So what would happen is that a particular bond house would look at all the stuff that it knows is about to become worthless, and package that stuff up and sell it into a trust like the Bank of America's trust, because that trust, which was just written off $28 billion in America, was other people's money. It wasn't the Bank of America's own money. In the meantime, the people who had been holding those worthless bonds at the time before everybody else knew they were worthless managed to sell them into those trusts on the old Aladdin's new lamps for old. Give us those nice bonds that you've got over there, and we'll give you this package here, which pays you an extra half a point or whatever. And these guys were, they were offloading, to my knowledge, at least 6 months before anybody even said the word subprime this year. And, of course, by then they were out of it. But the people in the derivatives market, that was on the assets themselves, the actual bonds, but they didn't. The people in the derivatives couldn't get out of it, because those are OTC contracts, counterparty to counterparty. So it wasn't possible to do that. Usually what you have to do is bribe the guys who own the trusts as well. So you'll probably find that the guys who were the fund managers at that trust at Bank of America will retire very happily into Switzerland with a few, you know, tens of millions of dollars hidden in a Swiss bank account somewhere as well. They'll have taken a brown paper envelope in order to swap the quality bonds for the rubbish. But that had been going on, to my knowledge, for at least 6 months before it went into the Baber Channel.
Well, now we're in a. I use the term cascading right now of our finances, and I think it should be more dire than that as an explanation. I mean, it isn't just the derivatives market anymore. It's short-term credit for credit card. It's people right now are putting their whole next month's expenses on credit card. Do you know the kinds of things? I mean, the negative savings rate aside, which is just a symptom of the sickness of our financial system in the United States, but when you start adding the ramping up of that negative savings rate into a place where people are actually living off their credit card because what they could buy last month and the month before is now 20-30% more expensive, and they're finding their house in negative equity, and they're walking away, leaving whoever is going to try to clean the mess up. There is a crap storm bigger than anything I have ever seen in my life, and it's not starting. We are in it. The gale force winds are all around us.
Oh, no doubt. The start of this storm, as I say, was 14 months ago, at least, it may be 18 months ago. People have picked it up on their radar, the professionals in the industry. They got out of the position. They let it come into the newspapers. And a bit like Kenneth Lay at Enron, you know, just talking what they've been doing for the last year, really, has been talking it up. You remember the week before Enron collapsed, he'd been telling everybody there was absolutely nothing wrong with Enron's share price. If anything, it was still a little bit undervalued. And he himself had personally sold his portfolio of Enron shares and options the day after he made the statement and took cash. These people are all pulling the same trick. They were talking it up. But you can only talk that up until the annual accounts come out. And UBS, the reason why UBS have just admitted that they've borrowed $17.2 billion and that there's another $10 billion on top of the $12 billion they've lost so far this year, the reason they've just fessed up to that, ladies and gentlemen, is that their annual accounts are due out. And every year they've got to post what's gone on. So they can lie for a year, and then all of a sudden it's got to come out. And basically, we're reaching that stage where all these companies, Darrell, are facing their respective year ends. A lot of them have them at the end of December. Some of them do April for the tax year in the UK. There are some anomalies in the United States as well. But basically, a lot of the lies now are coming out of the woodwork this month. And we're beginning to see how far we are into this storm. And it is a dark and gloomy one, and we are a long way into it. And it's got a lot further to go, I'm afraid, as well now.
How bad can this get?
Well,
I mean, in my view, and I've got a lot of background in this stuff, as you know, and the listeners know. I've always said that the real nightmare is going to be precipitated by money and by finance. I see the whole thing going belly up. I see the whole financial structure going down, and I don't see it happening in a day or a week, but. But it's possible that it could happen a lot faster than I have anticipated.
Well, the contagion now, because of the failure to give the half point, is clearly going to spread from the financial system into other sectors of the U.S. economy. Retail, manufacturing, and industrials. Those three, in the normal turn of events, as we were discussing earlier on today, Darrell, you know, January, bad news for retail. As has been historically viewed, another 2 months manufacturing are complaining, and industries 2 months after that. As you say, also earlier on this afternoon, this is going to be probably more accelerated simply because those companies can't turn to the banks for interim finance and restructuring because the money just isn't there.
Well, let's go back down that list again just for a refresher here. We've got Bank of America, we've got Citibank, we've got Barclays Bank, we've got Abbey National, we've got Credit Agricole, which is Europe's third or fourth largest.
Northern
we've
Northern.
Got UBS,
yeah,
Warburg. We have, and we have Wells Fargo ready to report. I can't imagine. And then I don't. This is not even including the nightmare that no one is even talking about anymore because it's being used. It's being eclipsed by this. But the carry trade has collapsed, and repatriation of the Japanese currency and all of the unwinding of the Japanese carry trade isn't even getting reported. And that's in the, oh my goodness, the amount of money there. This thing is so huge, and it's all happening at once, and the only reason you're not hearing about the Japanese carry trade is because there's no room on the newspaper to put it all. Just, oh, man. What do you think of this? We want to add something to the carry trade, because that's...
Well, of course, the Japanese historically had a great deal of influence over the Federal Reserve because they held 12% of the U.S. national debt. Which is enormous for such a small country and such a large amount of money to actually be holding more than 10%. If you think about the number of countries in the world, you know, that's a substantial holding. And they used to have a lot of influence. But that influence, the Japanese have now realized, has been overshadowed. It was overshadowed by the Chinese cash holding, and the Chinese have managed to trump the Japanese influence in the United States through the playing of the cash card.
Yeah, but that going to that that 0% interest rate and then running back out into the world and buying bonds and treasuries at a different rate and then making the difference and paying the transfer fees and all the rest.
Yeah,
that has all come apart at the seams. It no longer is being done. So all of that activity that's been going on for about 8 years is starting to come apart.
Well, of course, the U.S. government were left between a rock and a hard place. Why? Because what had actually happened was, Darrell, that the Japanese had worked out what the, for want of a better phrase, the money masters were up to. They'd worked out what the game was, and they played the same game back on them because they said they were doing one thing. You know, we were trying to kickstart the Japanese economy by... lowering the base rate, blah, blah, blah. But in reality, the reason they did it was to generate money at no cost, which is what everybody says is impossible to do when you try to say we can put money out there just as a debit into society rather than a credit, if you like. We can put money out there at no cost, without interest, just for requirements. The Japanese have been doing it for a long time, but they sold everybody on it being done for a different reason and in a different way, which was extremely clever of them. And they used a lot of those yen that had been printed out of nowhere at no cost to buy bonds in the United States that paid a coupon. And then they didn't have to do any work because they just had this massive income stream coming in every time that the U.S. Government bonds were paying their interest coupons. All these dollars, because although the capital dollars have to stay in the States, the actual interest dollars were all migrating into Japan and supporting the Japanese economy.
Well, now this stuff isn't working anymore, Muhammad. It's not working. I mean, they've complicated themselves right out of their crime network. They're gonna break the back of everybody who's been stealing all this stuff. So, I mean, there is a hopeful part of this, but I don't see anything good coming out of it for the plebiscite like you and I. I mean, I'm down at the bottom of the food chain here. I can't see this helping me in any way.
None of it's going to help the man in the street. To liken what went on, Darrell, in terms of the problem that the U.S. government faced. Was that, you know, they as a pickpocket had their hands in everybody's pockets. They turn around to find the Japanese chap stood there with a hand in their pocket. And it's very difficult to turn around and say, look, everybody, he's picking pockets, because they would have blown their own game. They have stopped the carry trade through implementing a couple of rules and calling it the carry trade and all the rest of it. But what they've tried to do is box off the Japanese game to some degree, but they can't get rid of the current holding. Although they've stopped the Japanese from getting an increased holding, they obviously have to live with the fact that these guys have managed to get all these bonds with these coupon streams, and they're having to pretend that nobody's a pickpocket in the meantime, so the Japanese don't blow the whistle on them, you see.
Well, you know, now let's talk a little bit about the options and futures here. And, you know, when these things were packaged and they were put out, you know, and the strike price that was met and on the issuance, the strike price being the price that was first paid for the instrument, for the option or the bond or whatever it is we're talking about, that's the price we first paid. It has changed. And it is no longer in balance. It, for whatever reason, if there's a bad leg to it from the subprime or whatever, or the rest of it has shifted. There are huge numbers of contracts out there that need to be paid off, because in every agreement there is a winner and a loser.
Yep.
Now the winner has to receive their just desserts, and the loser has to pay up. How are they going to do that?
Well, this is precisely why UBS has just gone and borrowed $17 billion. It's obviously on the losing end of a large number of transactions. Now, some of those OTC contracts, especially the swaps, they contain things known as break dates and reset dates.
Mm-hmm.
And by mutual consent, it is possible for the parties to settle out the net present value difference between the contracts as at what the maturity. They even settle like this, Darrell. They would settle the net present value of what the difference would be at maturity and walk away from the contract today. So they close out today and say, this would have finished like this. We would have made this amount of money. Therefore, pay us this value of the net present value of it. If you're on the winning side of a contract and you think it's just going to keep going in your favor, it's very unlikely that you, by mutual consent, will agree to get out of that. A lot of people have found themselves making vast amounts of money and are turning around to the likes of UBS and saying, excuse me, pay up. And UBS are having to go out and borrow from the strangest places in the world as a bank. I mean, the most ridiculous things I've ever seen. It's so amateur. It's so amateur for a bank like UBS to approach a raghead, to quote people just a few years ago, a raghead in the Middle East to put $7 or $8 billion up so I don't go out of business.
Well, see, that's exactly the rub here, because what we're seeing here is that and you know, these big, and let's be honest, I mean, the people in the Middle East that are all these multi-billionaires are more likely working with the Zionist conspiracy than not, and these sultans and these kings of Saudi Arabia and whatnot are the brethren of the Zionist movement, and so if they're ponying up money, it's because parts of their own criminal conspiracy are clamoring for aid.
Yep.
And in fact, you know, if you want to take a look at the royal family of Saudi Arabia, for example, 150 years ago, they were of Jewish stock, as Bin Laden is. His mother is a Yemeni Jewess. And the simple fact of the matter is that, you know, once you start digging past the smoke screen, the true history of this stuff brings you back to Zionism in every sense and in every case. And I don't see them benefiting from this in the short term. There will be winners, and I think the big players who are holding those hard assets, as I keep going back to, are going to end up, when the dust settles, as being the huge winners here. And it may be a very small group. They may be selling out their own. They may be selling out their own troops in order to take full control at the top.
What you've said is very important there, Darrell. The fact of the matter is that these people are calling in favors from their allies and brethren, even in some circumstances, no doubt, to keep the banking and financial system afloat. When we look at the protocols were quite clear. They were going to collapse the economic system of the world, and then right at the end finish that with a financial collapse. What's happened is that the financial system has collapsed first. They have not planned this. They are between Iraq and a hard place, trying to get money to keep their system alive so that they run long enough to collapse the economies first. They want everybody running out and buying shotgun cartridges and tins of beans and then collapse the financial system at the end. For the financial system to collapse first is all wrong. It's a big problem for them.
Mm. But that doesn't mean the people holding the title to all of these assets that we've been discussing are going to be hurt in this. And what I'm saying to you right now is it's probably a group of 100 or 200 powerful people who have most of the holdings. I mean, the rubbish pickup companies, the water system companies. Look, Mohammed, Veolia drives up to the front of my house over here. This is a Rothschild company.
Yeah.
They own the water company here. They own the U.S. Filter, the largest water holder in the United States. 60% of the cities run through U.S. Filter. That's Rothschild. They own the rubbish pickup, Brown and Root. Brown and Ferris business, the biggest rubbish pickup. They took that away from their Italian arm, and now they own that. My point being is all of the major holdings of the planet are in their hands now.
Yeah, the Rothschild family extends out to about 400, just over 400 in total worldwide. There are probably maybe 5,000 to 10,000 people worldwide who are completely unaffected by what's going on. I agree with you there, Darrell. Yes, no doubt about it. And those people were planning and running on this document, this forgery or whatever, from a long, long time ago. The point is that they, in their greed, created a financial system that gave them insane levels of leverage, which has resulted in it collapsing before they planned it to. From a personal perspective, they're not feeling anything. Absolutely no. Not in the slightest. It's irrelevant. But it does affect their game plan. That's what it is affecting and hurting very badly.
I can see a sense, and I also know that at the same time, we have accelerated that by exposing them.
Yep.
The situation is that the world is starting to understand that criminal Zionism and criminal Judaism are represented through Lori and Kabbalah and the like are behind this conspiracy, and people are beginning to pressure them. I mean, I told you earlier in a conversation, there are people going out now and confronting these people during their speeches. When they're doing book signings, they're being confronted. They're being confronted on film. There's no place they can hide anymore. And it's in fact they're afraid to give public speaking events anymore. These Zionists, because what ends up happening is they end up getting upstaged and embarrassed and driven out.
That's fantastic. That's great. And that again is something that you were advocating, and I joined you in that a year and a half ago on the French Connection, which is if you want to do something, go out there and confront these people, find out where their venues are. Turn up there and let them know that you know. Bring it to their face. Don't be afraid of throwing it in their face. They're frightened of you turning up, not the other way around. You shouldn't be frightened of turning up there. Go there and tell them, I know what you're all about. I know what you're doing. That advocation, Darrell, is something which is brilliant. Now they're facing a double whammy. Because of the work on the French Connection, trying to get this message out as far as possible, they were stretched. Their resources were being stretched trying to contain that. Now all of a sudden behind them, the financial markets are melting down, and they're beginning to appreciate real stress now because they're trying to keep all the... They can't keep focused on trying to contain this message and go up against this message and simultaneously try and sort out this melting banking system. What's going to go for them next? It's the ship that's filling with holes. There's so many holes they can't plug it. It was bad enough just on people waking up. But this has added a new dimension to their woes.
Well, I have to say that if we continue the pressure and help it build, help it expand, and this stream is one of those ways, Mohammed, and I'm hoping for a little plug by you because we certainly need the people. We have the largest audience we've ever had. It's only our second or third broadcast on this. 40 people listening, 40. But it was only 10 the other day. But we've had problems with this. We're ironing out how to do it. We've got the system down now. What we'd like to do, ladies and gentlemen, is get this message out to everybody. The facts that we've been putting out are spot on. go back and listen to our what we said in the beginning of November. And before anybody knew what was going to happen, we put this these facts out, and then look 5 to 6 weeks in advance and into the future, we were right on the money. We knew this was coming because the handwriting was on the wall for a long time for a lot of people, and a lot of, in all fairness, a lot of people knew we were heading for a mess, but they couldn't dissect it. They knew we were having the problems, and I admit that we've had a great number of people out there fighting the good fight, but not many people have had the ability to describe to listeners what it is that's happened to us all. Now, what is the solution for the man on the street, as you call him? What do we do about this?
Well, in terms of protecting yourself from what's going to happen in the medium term, in terms of the financial problems.
Yes.
I would say that, you know, you've got to get out of your leverage, because, you know, one of the things that will happen is that they will start getting nasty. When they have to collect, Daryl, they have to collect, and they send around those big guys who've been down at the gym taking steroids, and they will walk in and take your furniture away. I mean, if you've got exposure and you can minimize it in any way, you should do so. Certainly don't look at taking exposure at the moment unless you're in a very, very – you've got a strong cushion. You know, don't bet the farm on it, I believe the expression is, Daryl, yeah?
Mm. Well, I think, you know, that there's even a more fundamental need out there, and that is, as you said before, for cartridges and tins of beans. you know, it can't hurt to have either one of those at this point, because, you know, it would behoove these criminals to try to cover their tracks and cover their rear ends here with some sort of a mayhem and anarchy. And it seems to me that they're probably setting us up for some kind of false flag event. And you can notice there's been a big increase in bombings. Look what they've just done in Lebanon, using 200 tons, I think it is. Yes, 200 tons of explosives to kill one general. This is a trailer truck load of explosives. I mean, it put a crater the size of a small football stadium in the ground. And then what else we had? We had the double bombing over here blamed on Al-Qaeda. Give me a break. And in Algeria. And this is being spewed out all over the French press and all over the CNN press, that Al-Qaeda is on the move and all this lying crap. What does this mean? It means that they're looking for another opportunity to do a false flag, to put the fire out from all of the stuff we're doing.
Yep, distraction. Try and create distractions.
But I'm thinking they're going to try to shut the internet down, is what I'm wondering. I mean, because this is what's doing them in.
It's impossible. It's the nature of the technology. It's a technology that was designed to withstand nuclear attack, as we've said repeatedly. That's why they're standing by watching helplessly. What they're trying to do, the only avenue left, is to try and contain the message. And they're doing such a bad job of it that, you know, Mr. Jones's very dear and close friend, who's his monetary expert, very quickly turned out to be a Zoharite. We were able to put that together on the net just from half an hour or so's research.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of smoking guns about Alex Jones being a lying criminal. And isn't it funny that he tries his hand at giving causes of this implosion and then leaves out all the usual suspects? It's amazing. It's like saying, you know, this war is going on here, and then never mentioning the participants. I mean, it baffles me how he gets away with it. It really does. And it frightens me in some way, because I wonder just how dumbed down people have to be to stay with this guy listening to these lies so long. It amazes me that people do it.
Yeah, well, I think that people will be waking up. He seems to be, any subject that you seem to discuss at the moment, Daryl, he seems to want to try and cover it. That's what it appears to me. And with people who are not qualified to actually give a good commentary and exposition of what's going on, they're not actually properly qualified. And in fact, appear to be qualified in hypnosis, which is a strange thing to be qualified in. Can't help but wonder if if actually that may, that's maybe why, you know, people tune in, and before they know it, they're drinking a warm glass of milk at night and listening to the relaxing tone of Jones, and his guests come on and then make them feel properly relaxed, and, you know, you will tune in tomorrow. Is being played backwards in the theme song.
I buried Paul. Hey, who knows who they're getting lessons from? Tavistock might be over there in the booth with Alex or something. Might have a couple of Tavistock experts over there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh boy. Well, you know, ladies and gentlemen, this was not quite what I promised. We were supposed to get into the nuts and bolts of how the system works, but. Frankly, I think it was more important to start telling you about the companies that are being destroyed here. If you've got your stuff in Citibank, you know, you might want to go down there before the bank rush comes. If you've got stuff in Bank of America, you might want to go belly up, go up to the window and get your cash out before they go belly up. And buy yourself some hard assets such as silver coins or something. It would be my recommendation. I'm thinking people need to change from currency assets into something different. And what do you think of that for them? I mean, just I'm not a big pusher of gold. I don't think gold should be replacing our financial system. But right now, as a hedge against what's coming in the future, I think as a short-term solution, it might not be bad to have things like silver. Gold they can confiscate. Gold they will confiscate. You know, they already did it in 1933 under the Gold Confiscation Act. Under the criminal Roosevelt, but silver has never been confiscated. It's too readily available, and it does hold a pretty decent value.
There are many things that people could put their money into by way of hard assets, chattels and other types of investments. Those things are certainly worth considering. I would say you're right to caution people to look closely at the companies which currently have their monies and their investments, and they should be seriously thinking about going into a very low-risk environment, going to banks that stick to traditional banking that don't have this exposure because, you know, UBS is not a bank that we would expect to be bankrupt. It's insolvent. That's why it's had to go to these other places for money. Don't be under any illusion about UBS, and if you've got offshore money or whatever in a bank like that, you really seriously need to think about moving it somewhere where you're not going to have that kind of risk of the bank just filing in a notice saying we're giving back everybody $5 on the dollar, you know, it's $5 on the hundred rather. You need to get out of that risk, and you need to find, you know, small institutions, strangely enough, that haven't got involved in leverage, that have stayed in traditional financial circles, just to protect your cash, because you're going to need cash. How much it will be worth when you try to exchange it is a different matter. But in the first instance, you've got to put it somewhere where you'll be able to get it back out and that you won't be at risk of losing 90% of it or something.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I hate being the bearer of bad tidings these days, but, you know, this is the way it's happening, and, you know, this is what we face, and I'm thinking we need to start getting our police departments informed. We need to start telling the county sheriffs and our local chiefs of police. We need to start sending them information, start slowly, anonymously if you need to, or go down with a group of men from the community. Hat in hand, as I've said before, and be upfront with them. Be somber about it. Don't be like, you know, wackadoo, and be very clear and say, look, you've got to look into these things because this community needs your steady hand right now. A chief of police in a small 8,000 or 10,000 population community in America. It works for the public. They're not owned by the federal government. They're owned by the people who pay the taxes in that town. And that person needs to know who's paying his salary, and he needs to know the facts so he can make the right decisions about his population. And by the way, the county sheriff in each county in America has the right to kick out any federal law enforcement agency it wants. They are not, by law, able to come into a county and act as a police force without the approval of that sheriff. And so this is the law. Now, the sheriff could muster a whole lot of resistance against the federal government coming in and taking draconian measures or allowing companies like Blackwater to come in and start confiscating weapons. These kinds of things need to be considered now, because all of the eventual things that they're willing to do may just become part of the daily plan change here, and we may be seeing these things happening soon. We've got to consider this. Mohammed, you know, I don't know that Britain is that far advanced, but I certainly know these kinds of things are on the way, and I can smell it coming here in France. I can see the aggressivity of the police. I can see the masked police departments here, like they are in America. They look like ninjas for crying out loud, and the brutality that I'm watching on my television screen as these people go out into the community is getting frightening. And it's on my nightly television shows.
Historically, you know, if I saw a policeman being beat up in the UK, I would have gone to his aid. But in this day and age, I stand by and think, you know, what was he doing to deserve this? You know, there's a bit of a doubt now, because you read about these women in America getting tasered who were 7 months pregnant. I dread to think what I would do to a policeman who did that to my wife or my sister. And I could understand any man reacting, whether I don't care if a man's a policeman or not. If somebody does something like that to a vulnerable woman, he ceases to be counted among the decent members of the human race, in my opinion.
Well, but at the same time, police departments across America are by and large small organizations. You know, when you get to the city level, of course, they're large, and you would have very little opportunity to change minds there. But that's not true in small-town America. And America is made up, by and large, by small communities everywhere. And those people need to be approached with these facts. And I think if they've been following their news cycles, they're aware of a lot of the things that are happening as well. And you may be pleasantly surprised, or at least not shocked by they may not laugh in your face as they have to me a year ago. Like I said last night on my broadcast, Mohammed, I contacted somebody in my local area where I'm from, a police chief, and I did that a year ago, and then he laughed at me. I mean, you could hear him chuckling, thinking I was just some whack calling him. And I called him back, and the attitude had changed completely, and he was definitely had a sea change in his thinking. Now, he, of course, didn't tip his hand and tell me what kind of measures he's been willing to do and look into. But he certainly was not against what I was saying anymore.
Well, that's great news. I must admit, the American system, as you've just explained it, sounds like we could all do with copying that, rather than having this blank face of officialdom in the police forces, which are totally detached from the people. It sounds like where people have an involvement and a say and know who they're dealing with, it sounds like an idealistic situation to me.
Well, small-town America still has that. I mean, you drive through the United States and you'll see the name of the town on the side of the police car. That means there's 12 people working in that police department, and there's a chief, and there's a lieutenant there. And, you know, these people come from the town itself, and they probably live next door to somebody looking into these facts. So that means you, ladies and gentlemen, you go out and you say, look, this stuff is pretty dire, guys, and we got to take a peek at it here. And, of course, they might say, well, I'm not sure about – but, you know, been watching the news cycles too, and they know what's going on, just like everybody else is waking up. They need to be brought up to speed just like everybody else. And when it comes down to crunch time, they know who's paying their paycheck, and it's the taxpayer from that small town. So anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I hope this has been an informative file for you. We're going to try to expand the amount of live broadcasting that we do, and we're going to continue, of course, looking through our file base and trying to put up information for you from other works that we've done. Our last broadcast of Morgan Reynolds, we apologize for. I hope none of you were offended by that, because this guy turns out to be a chucklehead. And we accidentally put him on one of the cycles. That's a mistake. But anyway, until the next time, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you all for listening to The French Connection. Take care of your families and be well. Bye-bye now.
Whoa.